Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we will be talking with Mr. Leonard Jacobs. He is the president and CEO of a leading cybersecurity firm known as NetSecurus. They're based in Olive Branch, Mississippi. Leonard, thanks for your time, and let's go and get started, please.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's our honor. Now, we did some scooping up on you. We didn't do any background check or do anything on, like, my life or anything like that, but we looked up your bio, we looked on you on LinkedIn, and did some Google searching, and you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us what got you into cyber and some of the highlights of your career?
Sure, I'd be glad to. I've been in technology management since the year 1981, right after college, and I went to work for a mini computer manufacturer long before cybersecurity was ever a glimmer in anyone's eye, because there was no networking per se back then. There was certainly no Ethernet back then, and I worked for several companies before cybersecurity was ever even a worry by anyone. And I kind of fell into cybersecurity probably by accident. I was working in a field that ended up being a very large target for cybersecurity, and that was in financial services. I ended up becoming a CISO for a major credit union, and worked in financial services for several years. So that's basically how I got started and learned on the job. And then also took a lot of certification classes and things like that. My boss was very good to me, sent me to a lot of training.
Okay. Are there any other highlights you'd like to elaborate more upon? Or?
I've sort of specialized in a certain field of cybersecurity, and that is around continuous monitoring, and also branched out into industrial control cybersecurity. And it's kind of ironic that I fell into that, because the first company I worked for, as I mentioned earlier, was in the industrial space, working with companies like U.S. Steel was one of my customers, and I was spending a lot of time on that kind of equipment. And then later in my career, I've worked and done some work with utilities. And so utilities is actually one of our specialties at NetSecure. So financial services, utilities, we've gotten into manufacturing, we've done some government work, and then there's a smattering of other industries that we've gotten into.
Excellent. Okay. Now, how did you venture into NetSecurus? Is this a company that you kind of helped to create? Is it your own company, or do you have other business partners on board?
I created it myself. It came about as part of a layoff. I was working for a company, and I was working in cybersecurity for them, and they had a little bit of a downsizing, and I decided that I was going to try my hand at starting my own company instead of going back to work for someone else. And we've been very successful at doing it. So that's pretty much how it came about. It's an unusual way. We're a very closely held company. We're not a public company. And so I don't really have any partners in it, per se.
Okay. So is this primarily you, then, or...?
I'm sorry, what was that question?
So it's just primarily you?
We have an established team of about 10 people. I have a very wide range of very specialized people that work in as analysts, and I also we have office staff as well, and we have a very able body. She does a very good job, account manager. So she does sales,
okay.
And she also keeps me straight.
Oh, that's good. Okay, cool. Now, how long has NetSecure been in business? I've looked at your LinkedIn profile. It's been around for quite some time.
Yeah, we actually established it in July 2000 out of that layoff situation I mentioned before. You know, there have been a few long-term contracts, engagements, consulting engagements as well along the way. But basically, it started in July 2000.
Okay. Now, do you have a presence in other countries as well? Are you just located primarily in the Mississippi area? Or do you have a broader reach throughout the United States? Or what's your reach like?
We have a very broad range within the U.S. We don't have any territories per se. We do work with some companies in Canada, but it's mostly North America.
Okay. What other countries do you work in? Do you have a presence like in Asia or the Pacific Rim or anywhere around there?
No. No, we're not, like I said before, we're mostly North America. We don't do any international other than maybe in Canada. So.
Okay. Do you have any outreach in Mexico in that area? Or?
No outreach into Mexico, at least not so far.
Okay, cool. Excellent. Now, what kind of vertical market customers do you aim for? Who's your... I guess it kind of leads to our next question, too, so we'll kind of lump the two together. Who is your typical customer base that you're trying to target? Is it the small, medium-sized businesses, the larger companies, or a combination of both? And, like, what kind of size of organization do you target, like by employee size, revenue size? And what kind of industries do you, for lack of a better term, what do you like to fish after?
Yeah, well, when we started, we were focusing on a lot of small business, but we have a tendency to lean towards medium size to small large. We don't really work with a lot of Fortune 500 companies because many of them have services in house that we just can't compete with, and so we don't really focus on the higher level large companies. But we primarily work. The kind of work we do, we can do with any particular kind of vertical market. But we have had most of our vertical markets have been involved around financial services, utilities, manufacturing, government work. We've done a lot of work with electric co-ops and medium-sized manufacturing firms. And in financial services, it's anywhere from small to medium-sized financial services, you know, banks, community banks, credit unions, things like that.
Okay, excellent. Let's get into your product and service line. It looks like that you have distinct service lines in network penetration testing, vulnerability assessments, breach simulations, phishing testing, web app security assessments, risk assessments, network security monitoring. Another one that's kind of piqued my curiosity is the industrial control cybersecurity consulting. So it seems like you do a lot of work along the network and the web apps area and just doing risk assessments. Can you kind of elaborate more on these services and how you use them? How are they made available? Do you actually go on site to a customer's place of business? Do you do this virtually, remotely? Can you kind of expand on all that, please?
Sure, actually. I'd be glad to. We really have two lines of services. I like to differentiate between the two lines of services. We have the assessment and testing line of services, and then we have the more active types of monitoring type services. So, for example, network penetration testing and system and network vulnerability assessments. Let's start with those and I'll explain it because it will go into in detail about, you know, whether we do it on-prem or in the cloud or whatever mechanism. But network penetration testing is, since it's an external test, we do that from our network, from our secure network, and out through the Internet to the customer. And that's pretty much. We don't farm out any of our services. It's all done by our staff, with one exception, which I'll talk to you about in a minute here. The system and network vulnerability assessments, we typically, in the early days, we typically did go out to the customer and do that work for them by sitting on site and running all those tests. But today, and most of the time that we've been in business, we actually send a hardened appliance out to the customer, and they install it on their network, and we do that test remotely through a remote channel, typically VPN, and run those tests on the customer. And it's very similar to a network penetration test. It's almost the opposite of each other. You know, with a network penetration test, you're trying to find holes in a customer's network so that you can penetrate their network. But in order to do that, you really have to run a vulnerability assessment to find the holes that they have. And then you put an attack plan together to try to attack their network from the outside. And that's only if they've asked us to do that. If they just want to know what the holes are, we can tell them what the holes are. But we do it a lot more different than some other companies do it. They have a tendency to try to do what is called a port scan. We do a far more extensive test than just a port scan. A port scan really doesn't tell you much other than at this moment in time there is a TCP/IP port open on their network. You know, whether it's something like SMTP or port 25, or like most people have to have web traffic, so they're going to open up HTTP and HTTPS. We go well beyond just telling them those holes that they might have in their network. The exception to my statement about that we do everything in-house, we've partnered with another company that has developed an attack and network breach simulation mechanism. And so we've partnered with them to manage that for our customers, but it's really on their platform and their cloud. Phishing testing is interesting because it's one of those social engineering tests that's done out there, and that's also in that category of testing as opposed to monitoring and management. Phishing testing, as everybody knows, so we attempt to try to simulate a phishing test against a customer. The interesting thing about it is our partner has that built into their simulation mechanism. So we used to do it on our own, but now we are doing it through their simulation mechanism because it's a whole lot easier than trying to do it ourselves. But it was amazing how successful we were in phishing a customer and getting into their network that way. And then we also have assessments that we do from the outside on website and web applications. And it's very similar to a vulnerability assessment. However, it goes into much more detail around websites and web applications. Sometimes they can be combined into one. And then we also have another test called a cybersecurity risk assessment that we do perform on site at a customer because we're looking at all their documentation and giving them suggestions on how to improve their security in their environment. The network security monitoring services is in that other category of where we're monitoring the customer's cybersecurity or information security, and we do that with various tools. But we, for the most part, we put an appliance on site at the customer, and we get secure remote access to that, and we are collecting it. That information, it goes into our SIEM, our security event management tool, for simplistic terms, and we notify the customer when we think that they have had a breach or a problem with their network. And that's an ongoing continuous monitoring, 24/7, 365. We run a cybersecurity operations center in our offices in Olive Branch, Mississippi, and again, I have staff 24/7 doing that. And then the last one, which you said you were very interested in looking at, is the having me talk about it, is the industrial control cybersecurity consulting, and it can be in various ways. We can combine some of the other services that we do and look at industrial control environments like manufacturing, utilities, things like that. But we have to do it in a manner that we're not going to take that customer down. So it's a specialized way of performing cybersecurity services.
Okay, the reason I had said that this is a strong area of interest of mine is because I've written a number of blogs about the threats to critical infrastructure. And I know that here in the United States, you know, we kind of use legacy-based systems, you know, that have been used in the 1960s and 1970s, or as a platform for leveraging, you know, our critical infrastructure, you know, like, you know, the power grid, nuclear facilities, water supply lines, food supply. What are your thoughts on just the critical infrastructure being a prime source of attack for a cyber attacker? Are we really at that grave of risk, or can we still buy some time? What are your thoughts on this? And after that, like, what have you done to help customers protect themselves and their critical infrastructure?
Well, I think in many cases, the infrastructure is quite resilient. Let's take the power grid, for example. It is quite resilient, and it has a lot of redundancy built into it. Here in the U.S., there have been very few cases compared to other parts of the world that where it has been more problematic. For example, the attacks that were done in the Ukraine. It did disrupt their grid, but it was still quite resilient, even with the disruptions that were occurring. They didn't recover where it took days to recover. It recovered, you know, within 8 to 12 hours, even sooner in some cases. So, you know, the whole industrial control, this definitely needs to be looked at and needs to be monitored, but it's less likely to be an issue. I think where most of the problems might happen with companies that are in the industrial control space, like power companies and manufacturing, is ransomware. I think the ransomware is probably the number one issue for most companies today. We hear more about ransomware attacks than almost anything else out there. Now, I'm just talking about it in simplistic terms because there are things that have to go, you know, be in place in order for those ransomware attacks to occur to begin with. But I don't think that the industrial control space is, at least here in North America, is as bad off as it is in other parts of the world. Not to say that it can't happen. You know, that's the one thing about cybersecurity, is it's unpredictable. There are a lot of factors involved there. Even if we ran network penetration tests, and I tell this to customers, even if we run network penetration testing to try to attack their network, whether it's industrial control space or not, it's a snapshot in time. If they make any little change to the network, it pretty much is those results may not be as effective to them in protecting their network. They have to make a decision whether, if we tell them that there's a problem with their network and we see an opening in it, you know, if they don't fix it, obviously the problem still exists. So I don't think the scare around industrial control is all that relevant. It needs to be taken care of. It needs to be watched. When there have been attacks on that, it's almost like a military attack, if that makes sense. The supply chain, you know, the number one thing that the enemy of a military is that you want to cut off the supply chain. So there are malicious actors in the world that are trying to go after industrial control space because they know they can, you know, if you cut the power off, then your military defenses have problems. And the whole idea behind the ransomware is the same thing. They're trying to disrupt things around your operation. They're trying to do a denial of service on it. And there have been many cases where the ransomware has not been, you know, you pay the ransom and they don't, they still don't unencrypt your data or give you the decryption key. So it's all about disruption for various purposes, if that makes sense.
Okay. Now, speaking of which, that kind of goes into our next question here. Have you helped customers deal with specific issues of ransomware, business email compromise, crypto mining, crypto jacking? Have you done a lot of work in those areas?
We have. We have helped customers with ransomware incidents. We also have, I would say they're not probably in the high level, like when you see a city of Atlanta have a problem or, you know, some of the governments that are having problems with that. But we have also determined that there was crypto mining going on because of our continuous network security monitoring. We have seen that occur on some of our customers' networks where they did not know one of their systems was being used for crypto mining.
Okay. Now,
and of course, I won't go into specifics, but yeah, we have seen it. I'm sorry, I interrupted you there.
Go ahead, please.
I'm sorry.
Would you like to elaborate? Go ahead. Do you want to elaborate some more? Or?
No, I was just saying that we've seen these things in various degrees of concern by our customers.
Okay. Well, another thing I wanted to ask you was, Leonard, we've got this unfortunate thing of the coronavirus going around. It's really wreaked havoc on our financial markets, businesses worldwide. And I just wrote a pretty lengthy blog posting now how the cyber attacker is now taking advantage of this to launch phishing email campaigns. And one thing I did notice is that the cyber attacker is not really launching phishing campaigns to ask for, like, donations to go to like, an overseas bank account. But what they're doing is they're sending out these emails in which people can, like, download to get more information. But really, the truth of the matter is they're just going to spoof a website where they're submitting their username and ID, and then the cyber attacker obviously is on the other side. Have you recently dealt with any cases, any cyber issues related to coronavirus or anything like that?
We have not seen that. We obviously read the morning news, the cybersecurity news, and we've heard of cases like this, but we have not seen that occur with any of our customers.
Okay. Do you think that this is going to be a much bigger issue down the road here as it relates to cybersecurity, or do you think it's kind of just stem out and just not kind of be like a blip in the radar pretty soon, or what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think the one comment I have on it is very similar to other things that have happened out there where the malicious actors have tried to take advantage of things that are occurring in the current news, like a disaster, they put out false information or things like that to try to take advantage of people. You often see this around the holiday times. It's very similar to that, where you might get an email that says, if you donate to us, we'll give the money to whatever. And so it's very, it's kind of an analog to that. I think in the news I've been reading about this is that they're using the contact to implant a malicious agent on the customer's network, and not just trying to steal information, but also trying to disrupt their to do all the. It's just another mechanism for them to do the bad things that they try to do. I don't know if it's going to get worse or get better, but clearly they're taking advantage of something that's totally unrelated to cybersecurity. And it's funny that they put this label of crypto on the coronavirus. And it's ironic that, used to call this malware viruses, but now we use this common term called malware. I kind of chuckle at that a little bit. You know, it's kind of weird to say chuckle at it, but it's just more of this taking advantage of people and their emotions.
Right. These are more probably typical, more like social engineering texts. Have you actually now kind of leads our, have you done any work with social engineering texts like the phishing, you know, like robocalls and what's the other one? V texting, I think, something like getting, you know, like fake text messages. Have you done any work in those areas of phishing?
We have done work in that area. As I mentioned earlier, we have had customers ask us to do phishing testing on them. We've even had cases where we drop USB tokens in their environment and to see if we wrote special code on those USB so that our contact person at that customer would get an email from when one of their employees would open up the file that we had on that USB token. We try not to do anything that's particularly malicious, you know, like take down a system or anything like that. It's more about how do we notify our contact at a customer that they have we've had an employee do something that because of that social engineering.
Okay. Now, do you have any customer success stories that you'd like to share with us? Any case studies, so forth?
Well, the big one I can think of actually was because of a website security assessment. We actually pointed out to them they were not aware that their code had a SQL injection in it. And we pointed that out to them. So that was kind of a highlight. You know, it's getting harder and harder to find things like network penetration tests becoming less effective because they're putting more controls in place. And so that's a really good thing. Other incidents that I'd like to point out is we did do a phishing test on a customer, and we've done it on a lot of customers, but this particular one was interesting. It was a financial services company, and when we were able to get in, you know, typically with the phishing testing, they either give us, the way we do it, they either give us, we gather credentials either for their network or we gather credentials for their, in financial services in particular, their home banking. So they're online banking, and in this one particular case, we found that one of their employees was collecting, not aware that, you know, there was a problem, but they were collecting in their Outlook web access. We got access to their email, and in their contacts, they had customers' information in there, like Social Security numbers and banking accounts, and I guess this person didn't realize that if any malicious actor got a hold of, like we did, that it would be a dream to be able to gather that kind of information. And so we, in our report to the customer, we brought that up. We've had other cases where they were sort of lucky when we did the test, social engineering test. They were able to, we were able to get in, but we found that their online, we were able to get into their online banking, but their bill pay was a separate login, and we were not able to get into that. But if it would have been in their online banking, we would have been able to set ourselves up as a merchant and take money from them. In this particular case, we discovered that the only way to get money out of their account was that a check would be cut and sent to their home. And of course, we weren't going to do like sit out at their mailbox to do that. That's a federal offense, and it would have been outside of our contract. We don't do anything that's outside the realm of the contract that we have with the customer. That's essentially our get-out-of-jail-free card.
Okay. Let's see here. Now, obviously, there are many, many other cybersecurity vendors out there. You know, there are a bunch of other pen testers, network security assessment firms, so forth, that probably do along the same lines of work that you do. What separates you from the other vendors? In other words, why should a customer come to you and say, hey, Leonard, I want to work with you versus these 500 other companies that are out there? What separates you from the rest of the crowd? And what's your differentiating factor?
Well, we don't make them feel like they're just the run-of-the-mill customer. We're very personable. We're very agile. We listen to our customers. I don't badmouth competitors by name, but I know that there are a lot of competitors out there that don't have the breadth of services that we do. They may only do like pen testing or something like that, but they don't do the rest of what we do. Frankly, we think that continuous security monitoring is much more effective than a pen test. And we're trying to get that message across. But I know that there are a lot of our competitors out there that they're just a big machine, and they treat their customers that way.
Okay. What are your thoughts on automated penetration testing? Have you ventured into that area where, like, most of the tasks are automated? So I just had a podcast with one company last week, and they do automate pen testing. They think that's going to be the next wave of the future. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know what the definition of automated penetration testing. I would say that our testing is automated. I don't call it automated. If they're referring to that the customer can just order the test online and it gets done, the question I would have then is, you know, the biggest it would be what is the customer really getting? Because in our testing, we don't just give them the results of whatever our testing tools that are automated, start them, they run, they give us results. I don't give our customers the result just out of the box. We actually analyze what we test on and make sure that there are no false positives. That's a big part of it. If I was just to give the customer results, there would be a slew of false positives in it. It's just natural. Every network is different, and we often have to have a conversation with the customer and confirm, does this really make sense? Did this really happen? So automating the process to a point is good, but to just automate it and let the customer have the results, if that's what's happening, you know, in this particular case, that's not a good thing.
Okay, excellent. Now, do you offer any free risk assessments for the customer before they actually come on board as a paying customer? Or let me put it this way, how do you onboard a customer? Do you meet with them first, give them the free trial, free assessments? Walk me through the steps if I were to become your, potentially become your customer.
Well, the one area that we do offer free trials is in our network security monitoring. We can put, for 30 days, we can put our appliance on site and tell them what's happening with their network. We also have done where you buy a certain number of months of our service, and we give you free time, you know, like a month free or 2 months free, depending on how many months that they buy. We have done that kind of activity. When it comes to penetration testing and things like that, we don't typically give free trials because they know they're going to want one. In some cases, they have to have one because the government regulators say they have to have one. So we usually don't do free trials on that, but when it comes to the security monitoring, we do offer that kind of activity.
Okay. Do you depend on a like a VAR, like a value add reseller model, to kind of get your name out there to kind of help market your products and services?
We do have a reseller network. We don't, you know, they have to qualify in order to be a reseller. We don't sell through the big distributors out there, like Ingram Micros and things like that. But we do have, I would say, a smaller reseller network at this point. The opportunity is out there. If a MSP, for example, wants to get into the cybersecurity business without making the investment like we have, we can offer that to them.
Okay. What kind of qualifications does it take to become a VAR for your company, if you can expand on that?
Well, there's not much in the way of qualification other than, they're established. They have an established customer base. They have a customer base that would require these kinds of services, and and we teach them how to market these services as well. We don't particularly have a certain price point that they or income level that they need to be at as a qualification. In many cases, we would rather that they sell our services than that they give us a lead to sell the services.
Okay. Now, is the federal government, like the U.S. federal government, do they make use of your product and services? Would you consider them as a customer?
Well, we currently do not do any work with the federal government on these services. They certainly do have a long list of vendors, but we have never attempted to try to qualify as a federal government contractor. We have done a lot of work with county governments and some city governments, but federal government has not been an area that we've tackled up to this point. It's a very crowded market.
Do that.
We don't have any plans for it anytime soon.
Okay.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Well, speaking of which, what are your plans for expansion for NetSecurus? It sounds like you're on a pretty good growth curve. How do you plan to broaden out and kind of ride that wave more into the future?
Well, we have put together a training program for those organizations that want to have their employees. You know, it's a very interesting time that I had never seen before, and everybody's talking about it, and it's the shortage of qualified cybersecurity professionals. Everybody is trying to put programs together to help out in that area, and we've been pretty successful at training adult learners even to work for us. Most of our folks have to go through our training program before they even sit in the SOC alone, or at a desk alone. I personally developed a program for a 13-week program for learning about cybersecurity analysis. We're looking at expanding that into some other areas. We know that there are organizations like SANS out there. SANS is very expensive, but they're a very good program. The other area that we're looking at getting more into is that if a business wants to build out their own information security operations program, we have developed playbooks and can actually go out and help them build their program. And I think there's a great demand for that. We're also looking at secure cloud computing. It'd be very specialized because there are a lot of companies that are out there doing that, but we're exploring that. And we also have looked at some security product development ourselves, and I can't talk in great detail because it's not fully developed yet and not ready to be published about, but we are looking at that as well. We have an idea in mind that we think is unique, so we're looking at that.
Okay, excellent. Do you may plan to go overseas, maybe some overseas markets perhaps, or maybe shore up some partnerships in other countries? Do you have any plans for that down the road? Or
there are no direct plans to do that. You know, if a customer approached us, a referral or even just, we've been contacted a lot by organizations from time to time because they they find we're out there, and they call us and say, are we available to help them out? If that occurred, then we wouldn't turn it down. We would explore it with them. But we don't have a marketing program per se for overseas.
Okay. Well, now let's segue to the cybersecurity threat landscape in general. There are a couple of issues I kind of wanted your thoughts on. One of them is the Internet of Things. I find that to be kind of, you know, we all know that's, you know, where we interact with the objects both in our virtual and physical worlds, they all kind of like connect together. To me, I think it's kind of a scary proposition where things all connected because we have all this interconnectedness and it's just leading a greater attack for the hacker to, you know, penetrate into, and many of these points of connection are not very well secured. What are your thoughts on that? Do you have like a smart home or a smart car, and have you, has your company done work in IoT?
We have done some work in IoT, and actually this is a favorite topic of mine, not only IoT, but the industrial Internet of Things as well because of our industrial control practice. These are definitely areas that that need to be looked at, but in a way they're an extension of the network, so they could be monitored and control, or controls could be put into place to help with controlling the security around them. So they kind of sound like scary terms because they extend the network beyond where they are, beyond where the network is today. And the other topic I was just going to bring up along the same lines is edge computing. So these are computers that are put on the edge that get in from edge of the internet, if you want to put it that way, you know, edge of the network, and that the IoT devices report back to those. So it's sort of like a central collection. And from there back into a data center in someone's environment or in the cloud. And so we are looking at this as an expansion area of what we do today. There are companies that are already doing that, like our own. And so this would be an expansion area of ours. And again, a favorite topic of mine.
Okay. Well, it's interesting because I'm planning to hopefully write some e-books or some white papers on the Internet of Things, I think, later on down the road this year once I get some time. It's a very interesting topic. But do you think we're going to see things like smart cities and smart countries, or kind of whatever the cliché term is? Do you think it's going to expand on that? Like maybe for perhaps where you at, do you think your town is going to become a smart city?
I think it's already occurring. I think there are smart environments out there it's definitely a hot topic, and there are a lot of people and even universities looking at this.
Okay. Now, did you say smart farms? Did I hear correctly on that, or?
What was the smart? You said smart.
I thought I heard you say smart farms. Am I correct on that or no?
Smart farms, as in agriculture?
Yeah, maybe I misunderstood.
I think that's already occurring. That's already occurring.
Really?
And I think, you know, companies like John Deere and, you know, and Case and some of the tractor manufacturers are probably already looking at it because they already have it on their tractors. So I think, you know, between that and GPS, I think that they're already smart.
Well, do you know of any ag producers down in the southern area where they kind of are adapting the IoT? Have you dealt with any farmers?
I don't know of any personally. I don't know. Yeah, I have not dealt with any farmers in the agricultural field, but that would be a very interesting area to look at.
Okay, excellent. Now, another area, and I think that kind of relates more to your service areas as well, too, is that of cybersecurity insurance policy. That's one of the other hot-button topics right now. It's an area, I think, which is pretty messed up because a company thinks once they get a cybersecurity insurance policy that they get blanket coverage, but 90% of the time they don't get that blanket coverage. Have you dealt with cybersecurity insurance policies with customers? Do you have that with your services? Can you expand more on that?
No, we that's one area that I would refer a customer to, you know, an insurance broker or insurance company to do. That's one area that we would not get involved with. We've had spoken at conferences that, before that where there were people that, you know, insurance companies or insurance brokers that deal with that type of insurance. But we would not get involved with referring a customer to a specific brand. We're not a reseller or associated with any of those types of companies that deal with that.
Okay. Now, we keep hearing of nations. Now, another issue is of these nation-state threat actors in North Korea, China, Russia, you know, Russia meddling in elections. Now, we've got the 2020 presidential elections coming up here. What are your thoughts on this? Are we going to see some more meddling in our elections again this year, or do you think states are cyber secure enough? Because when I peruse their news headlines every morning, there's always some topic about, you know, election security. And have you dealt with any issues like that? Have you done any work in the area with NetSecures?
Well, in general, I would like to make the statement that I'm not big on attribution to any particular country. And the reason I say this is any country's network or their portion of the Internet can be used by any other country in the world just simply by sending the traffic through that country. And so you have to – I'm very careful when talking about countries and nation states. I do know that there are certain nation states that specialize in certain areas, and there's proven facts that they have meddled with whatever, you know, elections or, you know, stealing information. And these countries have had a reputation of doing that. I can't say that they're the only ones, you know, the ones that you mentioned are the only ones, because every country has a different motivation by doing threat, you know, with threat actors. But no, we haven't directly involved with any election authority here in the U.S. about protecting their election devices. I personally think it should be done on paper, you know, and scan like we did in college, you know, fill in the circle. To use anything that could be threatened, I don't think is a good way to go with, you know, that's a little editorial more than anything else. It's not necessarily related to what we do at NetSecures, but we have not been asked by any election authority to look at their, you know, what they're doing.
It's funny you say that, Leonard, because I was asking one of my friends the other day, like when we were in high school and college, how did we do it when there was no Google? How do we write our research papers? How do we, you know, get stuff done? It's crazy. Anyway. So another area I want to talk about.
Old school is the way to do it.
Yeah.
It's old school is the way to do it.
I miss the old days. You know, I didn't have a cell phone or anything. My biggest privilege was getting right to school back and forth. But anyway, it just shows how connected we are these days. Another area I want to talk about is that of artificial intelligence. I am currently going to be starting to write a book on that with a couple of other people. It's going to be about AI and cybersecurity, focusing on machine learning, computer vision, neural networks. Have you done any work on AI? Because I know AI is being used, I think, to a wider degree now in penetration testing for, like, automating the more routine tasks so that the pen tester can focus more on the holistic picture. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there's a place for it, and especially in the world that we deal with. And that scares within our own tools. I think that's a great need. I've been looking at behavioral analysis, which I think is behavioral analysis is right. These packets look a certain way today, but tomorrow they look a different way. Is that a cyber attack or not? So I think that AI would shorten up the time, or machine learning would shorten up the time. And in our particular case, we have a tool that does have machine learning built into it, or it can be built into it. So I think there is a need for it to make the human's life easier. But we like to say at NetSecures is that the best computer in the world is the one that's sitting on our shoulders. It's our brain. And I ask that question quite often, even to my students. I say, all right, so what do you think is the best computer in the world? And some say, oh, it's our brain. Well, our brain in a computer, because computers were invented by humans, our brain is a computer. And it's a proven fact. We may not know a lot about how the brain operates yet. They're still trying to figure out how the brain operates. But it very much mimics how computers, for a particular reason, like I mentioned before, they were invented by humans. It's how the brain processes logic. So I think there is a great need for AI, machine learning, neural networks. It's kind of funny because when I was growing up, we heard about these computers called, and now I'm drawing a blank on what it was, but it was basically using brain cells to make computers. I think there's a great need for it. I think it still needs to be perfected. There's still a long way to go for that. And you still need to use your human brain, your human computer, to analyze data, because there can be mistakes if you believe what the machine is telling you.
It's funny because you were talking about the human brain, because my dad was actually a professor at Purdue, and he was a neuroscientist doing work in spinal cord regeneration research, and he had the premise that one day we could do like brain transplantation, like much in a way that we could remove like the memory of a computer and replace the new one. He had maybe that notion that one day that might be possible. But, I mean, his research kind of didn't prove that. But he then segued into spinal cord regeneration research, where he was doing a lot of work and taking, like, I think, donor cells from a spinal cord and trying to put them into, like, an injured spinal cord in hopes that they would regenerate and make the person walk again. And I think he was on some kind of breakthrough. He was doing some work with, I think, amniotic fluid or something. So it's interesting the way that, you know, artificial intelligence, the way that people are going to try to mimic the human brain, because, you know, Leonard, truth be told, we can never really come close, even close to mimicking the human brain. We could try, but I don't think we'll ever even come maybe even 50% close ever to such a complicated work of, you know, machinery, you know?
Yes. Well, part of it is what I said before, was we don't know enough about the brain yet. We know about parts of the brain and how it operates, but we don't know everything about it. There are other organs in the body that we have a better handle on than the brain. It's very complex.
And who knows, we may never know. Now, based on your experience and knowledge in cybersecurity, what do you think the biggest cyber threat's going to be this year and maybe going into the next year, now that we're getting close to the end of Q2? What do you think the biggest cyber threat will be? Will it be ransomware, PEC? Attacks on critical infrastructure?
Well, I think the biggest one's going to continue to be ransomware. They seem, you know, until we get a better control over how the ransomware malicious actors get paid, you know, and that's a whole different topic on you know, the monetary system, you know, the Bitcoin system. If it's not a ledger, you know, and people are working on a ledger in many fields, not just cybersecurity, but the ledger technology has to be perfected in order to stop most of the way the ransomware is paid for today. If we open the identity of who's making transactions with Bitcoin, then that's going to take away the screen that's in front of, you know, that's hiding all these bad actors. So I think for the time being, ransomware is going to probably still be strong. I think that, you know, the sky's the limit. You know, the bad guys are very ingenious, and, you know, they're like a machine. They've become very organized. I just came back from a conference that talked about how they're using each other to get to the means that they want to get to. They're selling service agreements for malicious code that they use to do what they want to do. And there's a pattern. They're seeing patterns. You know, the people that are researching this are seeing patterns on how they deal with each other, how malicious actors deal with other malicious actors to get to the same means. They're selling to each other. And it's become this hidden economy behind, you know, in the dark web.
Okay. Now, another area I want to ask you about. Have you heard of,
I think that's where... I'm sorry?
Have you heard of deep fakes? That's where you deep fakes. It's kind of where it's like where you use artificial intelligence to replicate another individual. Like, for example, you may have like a cyber tracker trying to replicate a video of a fictitious video of like Joe Biden. It looks like almost like Joe Biden, same voice, same facial features, everything, but it's all like the spoof video. But they're just using that to get donations to another spoof website. And so, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think until we find a way to actually detect that, then it's bad. And I think there are probably some detection mechanisms. This is exactly what I was stating before, was that the bad actors are putting together these plans to do things that using technology that are, you know, going to expand the things that could occur out there in the landscape, the cyber threats that could occur in the landscape. I think that detection mechanisms would have to be devised, if not some of them already. We haven't dealt with it directly. We haven't heard of anything like that occurring to our customer base. But it is just another dangerous mechanism out there. And they're sort of using social engineering to do it, because they're tricking people's minds and thinking that it's the real thing.
Right. Well, I think social engineering is going to be another big thing, too, coming up. I mean, it seems like the cyber attacker, you know, everybody's well aware of all these digital threats now are becoming more cognizant. But I think now, because of that, cyber attacker now is going more towards the old traditional means of trying to scare and intimidate, you know, people on their cell phone, you know, with the fake text messages and so forth. I mean, I get so many robocalls today, I don't even answer my cell phone anymore unless I recognize a number. It's gotten that bad. Now, another question I have is that, you know, we keep hearing about the internet browser developers. They're trying to tighten DNS security used by their browsers.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a good thing. However, it's a bad thing. It's both. It's a bad thing in the sense that if you don't have a way to see what's inside that DNS packet, the bad guys have already been known to use DNS, even when it's not encrypted. They're using HTTP, which is not encrypted, for web traffic, because every firewall out there has to allow it out of a network. So if they implant a bad thing into the network, they're going to use whatever mechanism they can get to talk outbound, because we're naturally going to allow certain things to go outbound. So the DNS that gets encrypted now, in particular by that was announced by Firefox, by Mozilla, that on one hand, I think it's a good thing. And on the other hand, is if the bad guys get a hold of it, it's a bad thing. So there are two sides of that coin. But there are mechanisms. There are mechanisms to get to that traffic before it gets encrypted.
Okay. Now, finally, as we wrap up our show now, Leonard, I asked this every guest. Do you have a laundry list of the top 4 or 5 items that you tell businesses or individuals what they can do to mitigate the risks of being a victim? I used to say how to prevent being a victim, but I think anybody and everybody's at risk. So I'm kind of changing a little bit, saying how to mitigate the risk and lessen the chances of being a victim of cyber tech. What's your laundry list?
Well, I do have some items. Number one is know your IT asset inventory. If you don't know what you have, you can't protect it. And it should be a continuous process. All of what I'm going to state needs to be a continuous process, what I call the continuous improvement of your cybersecurity program or protection program. So number one would be know your IT asset inventory and keep it up to date. Put the most basic of controls, depending on your budget, put the most basic of controls in place on your network and on your systems. Make sure your firewall is up to date. Firewalls don't stop everything, but you can add things to that that to the basic firewalls to help control what's going in and out of your network. And again, the whole thing should be a continuous improvement process. We're a big proponent of continuous cybersecurity monitoring. You know, if you're not watching your logs and in the middle of the night there's an attack, if you wait till the next morning, it's too late. To see something happen the next morning, you need an action on it when it happens. Otherwise, you might as well say you've already been attacked and you're probably already compromised inside your network. And even to this day, one of the last things, I shouldn't call it the last things, but one of the most important things is employee education. Information security is every employee's responsibility. It's not just the techie folks that are maintaining your network or doing your cybersecurity work. Employee education, employees are the first line of defense in your network. They're going to see things occur, and they're going to need to know what they should do, who they should report it to. So make sure that you have an employee education program and a process to make sure they know what to do if they see something unusual. That especially holds true in an industrial control environment where you have operators on a manufacturing floor or operators running a power plant. They may think that some mechanical thing occurred, and that's because it's very easy for it to look like a mechanical issue, but it might quite easily be a cybersecurity incident. And they need to know what to do. Those would be my top things that I would tell, what we do tell our customers.
Okay. Are you a big fan of like password managers and multi-factor authentication also?
Yeah, and that falls into that cybersecurity controls. I think that that passwords are going to become passé. You might see them behind the scenes. It's already occurring in some environments. At this conference I went to recently, Microsoft had a couple of presenters, and they talked about what they're doing to help customers avoid the dilemma around password changes and things like that. So I'm a big proponent of password management systems using multi-factor. It's got to happen. And there are ways... You know, there's some free tools out there. There's some other ways that you can do it. You know, most of the tools do cost money, but they will someday save your butt.
Sure. Okay. Well, Leonard, we thank you very much for your time this afternoon. I think it was a great show. I learned a lot
thank
more
you.
About cyber from you. Thank you for your time. We look forward to having you again on a future show here pretty soon.
I would look forward to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.